Your comments on Guantanamo and then also on the 100 Indian deportees who apparently were shackled in a flight for 40 hours back to India.
Well, Guantanamo needs to close. I have been saying that for many, many years, and it's appalling that we would be expanding Guantanamo, where already there are issues of civil liberties. And obviously anyone needs to be treated with dignity. But there's a bigger issue here, Amy. You have President Trump talking about taking over Greenland. You have him talking about taking over Panama. You have him talking about making Canada the 51st state. You have him talking about Colombia and forcing Colombia to take military flights of migrants, totally oblivious to the history of the 1928 banana massacre, totally oblivious to the history of the United States' support of the military regime in Colombia. You have Donald Trump talking about mass displacement in Gaza with no recognition of Palestinian self-determination. I think he is in the wrong century. The 19th century colonialism and imperialism is what my grandfather stood up to with alongside Gandhi in the Indian independence movement. And we need to be very, very clear, not just in condemning these individual actions, but in condemning a project of American expansionism that violates the dignities and self-determination of people around the world.
Your comments on Netanyahu gifting Trump a golden pager to memorialize the thousands of pagers that blew up in the faces of doctors and other people in Lebanon that Israel booby-trapped?
Well, it was appalling, and it's the cruelty that I find so disheartening. You know, I feel an anger, but I feel a sadness as an American, because our best traditions as Americans, though not perfect, is at least standing up or aspiring for human rights, aspiring to stand up for the dignity and worth of every human being. And even where we haven't lived up to those ideals, we at least strive for those ideals. And this is a total rejection and almost celebration of killing. And it is a strain in America, but it is not, in my view, the essential strain. And somehow we have to overcome this by standing on principle. But I was truly appalled by that. And I was appalled by denying Palestinians any sense of self-determination. Even if it was done with as a joke, even if it's done as an outlandish proposal, it is so offensive to say to all Palestinians, go move, and we're not going to listen to what you want to do about Gaza.
Congressmember O'Connor, I want to thank you for being with us. Democratic Congressmember from California, Deputy Whip of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, speaking to us from the Cannon Rotunda. Next up, we look at the legal hurdles facing Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Stay with us. I'm Out of Love by Anastasia. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We look now at some of the new legal hurdles facing Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, as it tries to dismantle and restructure, as it says, multiple federal agencies. On Thursday, a lawsuit by a coalition of labor unions prompted the Labor Department to agree not to release any sensitive economic and privacy data to DOGE. The agency holds sensitive data, likely including worker complaints against Musk and his companies. The lawsuit argues, quote, DOGE seeks to gain access to sensitive systems before courts can stop them, dismantle agencies before Congress can assert its prerogatives in the federal budget, and intimidate and threaten employees who stand in their way. The results have already been catastrophic. DOGE has seized control of some of the most carefully protected information systems housed at the Treasury Department, taken hold of all sensitive personnel information at the Office of Personnel Management, and dismantled an entire agency within a week. A full hearing on the case is set for today. This comes as a similar lawsuit filed this week resulted in another agreement Thursday to stop DOGE from accessing millions of sensitive personal and financial records from the Treasury Department. The case was filed by Public Citizen on behalf of the American Federation of Government Employees, the Service Employees International Union, and the Alliance for Retired Americans. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Washington, D.C., Robert Weissman is with us, co-president of Public Citizen, which has also sued to stop the Trump administration's attack on the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. And in Arlington, Virginia, Rob Shriver is with us, senior advisor to Democracy Forward, which filed the lawsuit over Labor Department data on behalf of a coalition of labor unions. Until days ago, he was the acting director of the Office of Personnel Management under the Biden administration. Welcome you both to Democracy Now! Rob Shriver, let's begin with you. Is DOGE, is Elon Musk committing crimes here?
So, Amy, that it remains to be seen. But I think what we know right now is there are huge problems with what Elon Musk and his team are doing to access the most critical personal data that this country owns. There are processes in place that protect that data from public disclosure, that make sure that it's used appropriately and not to engage in retribution or gain competitive advantages. And I think the complaint that Democracy Forward filed on behalf of 4 million workers lays out in great detail the risk and the harm that is already happening.
Talk about the information that is at risk here. And the young men, 19, what, to 26, who used to work for SpaceX or X or Tesla, Elon Musk's private companies, who have access to this information.
Yeah, I think that latter part is incredibly alarming. We don't know if these individuals are employees of the government. We don't know if they've gone through any vetting process. You know, the background investigation process is not just some technical HR thing that people get annoyed about. It's meant to determine whether people are subject to blackmail or foreign agents or of such questionable character that they can't be trusted with sensitive data. So to bypass that process, which if that happened, would be a huge problem. We need to know, the American people need to know, what has happened to get these people access. And then the types of data that you're talking about include personally identifiable information, personal health records, data about workers' compensation claims, data about Elon Musk's competitors, and some of the data that our economy relies upon to be reported out objectively and without political interference.
Can you tell us what the agency that you were in charge of, the Office of Personnel Management, I mean, it sounds so bureaucratic, it's hard for people to identify with it, what the information you held there is and why it's so threatening? And can you talk, for example, about Medicaid?
Sure. So OPM is essentially the HR agency of the federal government. It issues HR policy. It manages and processes retirements for federal employees. It also manages the largest group health insurance program in the world, the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. So in order to carry out all of those functions, which, by the way, are largely nonpartisan, right? Like most of the time, OPM spends like just processing these retirement applications, managing health insurance, largely nonpartisan. But to carry out those missions, it has data on millions and millions of Americans, not just the 2.3 million active federal employees, but also the millions more retirees, the 8 million people who are enrolled in the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program, which includes federal employees, their family members, some of the highest ranking officials in government, including members of Congress. So all of that data is housed at OPM and subject to very strict rules and controls for who gets to access it, for what purpose. There are immense cybersecurity protections because the country may remember a large data breach in 2015 involving OPM that exposed millions of records of federal employees and family members. And as a result of that, there are extensive protections in place to prevent something like that from happening again.
I want to go to Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey, who was with Congress members Paul Tonko and Yasemin Ansari, turned away from EPA headquarters. This is Senator Markey speaking at a news conference outside the EPA after they were denied entry.
We just went in and asked for a meeting with the DOGE representatives. We were denied. We were turned away. And we just had a couple of simple questions for them. Are they still freezing EPA funding for all of the clean air and clean water programs in our country? Are they blocking the important work which the EPA does on a daily basis to protect the people in our country, the families of our country? And they did not give us the answers in the same way that they are not giving the answers to every other program in our country. Medicaid, Medicare, the Affordable Care Act, all of those health and environmental programs that are so central to the well-being of every family in our country. Trump and Elon Musk and their unqualified, unelected, unwanted henchmen want to be able to carry out their attacks on your environment, your rights, your friends, your neighbors, under the cover of darkness. So we're outside asking them to step out into the light of day.
So that's Massachusetts Senator Markey standing outside the EPA. He stopped from going inside. Agencies like this, I mean, we're talking about Treasury Department as well, senators and Congress member, police stopping them from moving in. But the DOGE kids, right, 19, 20, 21, 22, they're moving in. How much information they're getting is not clear. I want to bring Rob Weissman into this conversation. Robert Weissman is head of Public Citizen. Can you talk about this? What is happening right now and what your lawsuit is all about?
Yeah, thanks, Amy. I think the broad story is that Elon Musk and his acolytes are on an authoritarian rampage through the government. It's only sort of ideological. It may be serving his business interests, we don't know. But it's designed to access information, surveil the country, destroy the institutions of government, and advance corporate interests without restraint. I think for Elon Musk, it's fair to say he views this all as a kind of fun video game he's going to play for a little while, then walk away. It's been reported that the White House doesn't actually know what Musk is doing in detail, but is fine. They have a kind of plausible deniability. When things go really wrong, then they pull it back in and tell him, don't do that again. So we are really in a dangerous time. We're going to have to rely at first on the courts to restrain this. That's what the Democracy Forward lawsuit's about. It's what we've done at the Department of Treasury, where we were able to get an order yesterday restraining DOGE from accessing information at the Treasury Department, although still allowing two Musk acolytes inside the Treasury Department to get access to that information, now down to one because of the resignation you referenced earlier. This information is people's tax data. It's the government's payment data. So it's almost everyone in the country, personal information, income, and more. access to information about government payees. And it's not just that they want to see the information. It's clear and been reported that their desire is to be able to cut off payments to people and organizations and corporations, contractors, whatever, that are due payment through appropriate, you know, through congressionally appropriated money, through contractually obligated money, just to cut it off. That's their version of efficiency. It has nothing to do with efficiency. It's all about authoritarian imposition. And by the way, eventually people who lose money are going to be paid. So the idea that they're saving money is a lie. They're going to be costing money, even in the direct sense, beyond the massive harm they're going to inflict in this country and around the world.
Rob Weissman, Public Citizen recently filed a complaint with the Department of Justice urging an examination into whether FBI Director nominee Kash Patel should have registered under FARA, the Foreign Agents Registration Act. Explain why.
Well, in the course of seeking a nomination for a position like Director of the FBI, individuals are required to make all kinds of disclosures. That's considered by the Senate as part of the confirmation process. Kash Patel did not disclose to the Senate in time for his consideration, for his confirmation hearings, that he had been paid by the government of Qatar to do work. We don't know exactly what. That information has now come out. There's a question first why it wasn't disclosed, and that the Senate should be able to ask him, what were you doing? And consider whether it wants to confirm as head of the FBI someone who is a paid agent for a foreign country. There's also the non-trivial legal matter that you're required to register when you work for foreign governments, which Kash Patel did not do. Now, an extra interesting twist in this is the new Attorney General, Pam Bondi, also worked for Qatar. She did follow the requirements and register under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. But in her first day in office yesterday, she issued a memo in which she said, you know what, we're not going to enforce that law very much. By and large, you can violate the law unless you're engaged in espionage on behalf of a foreign country. So the new attorney general, who would be overseeing Kash Patel if he were confirmed, has already pre-announced that she won't really investigate this claim against Kash Patel, which is a serious one because it's plain he didn't file the registration requirements.
Speaking of Pam Bondi, the new attorney general, within her first days in office, she has done everything from ordering investigations into sanctuary cities to reinstating the federal death penalty. Does she have that power?
Well, the attorney general has a lot of power and a lot of discretionary decision-making authority. It's very likely she's going to overstep it. No one should be surprised. She got the job because she was an ardent Donald Trump supporter. She maintained that through her confirmation hearing. She should not have been confirmed. She's multiply conflicted with companies that the Department of Justice is or will be investigating. She proved herself unqualified by her devotion to Donald Trump and her defense of the coup on January 6th. But we are here where we are, and she's going to use both the discretionary, legitimate discretionary authority of the attorney general and illegitimate authority of the attorney general. One of her memos yesterday basically informed the Justice Department workforce, hey, your job is to work for Donald Trump. And we expect you to be loyal to the president's mission and priorities. Well, that's not the job of the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice is not the president's lawyer. The Department of Justice are the people's lawyers and required to uphold the laws of this country. And it's going to be a tough time in the next few years. We're going to see how vindictive she is. But the best case scenario isn't very good at all.
Public Citizen has filed a complaint with the Department of Justice and the Office of Government Ethics around President Trump. What, on January 17th, days before he was inaugurated, releasing an official Trump meme coin, which value skyrocketed to over $15 billion. What can you say about this?
Yeah, at a different time, this would be headline stories for a couple of weeks, but there's too much craziness and danger going on. So Trump launched this meme a couple of days before the inauguration. He's promoted it on Twitter and on Truth Social since he was inaugurated, saying, buy the meme. When you get the meme, you're essentially getting nothing. You pay what you pay. And Trump says it's not an investment. It's just support for an idea. So effectively, you're making a gift to Donald Trump. You can try to resell that gift if you want, but you're basically making a gift to Donald Trump. That's illegal for every federal employee except for the president, who can accept gifts. But the president is not permitted to solicit gifts. So we have argued that the idea that he's asking people to buy this meme, which is a valueless thing, not a security, as he says, constitutes the solicitation of a gift, and we've asked for an investigation.
Finally, I want to go back to Rob Shriver about the tactics in court and on the streets right now. Tens of thousands of federal workers have accepted the email, the resignation, resigning and being paid for the next 8 months. First of all, will they necessarily get that? Now, that's been stopped. The deadline was supposed to be last night at midnight, and a judge said no. But talk about what this means. You represent so many unions. And also, is the federal workforce one of the most diverse in the country? Is that also why it's being targeted?
Well, I think that's a good question. Certainly, we have worked over multiple administrations to make the federal workforce reflect the diversity of America through legitimate tactics like making sure we're recruiting broadly for talent. I think it's really important that Democracy Forward went to court and got this extension on the deadline because the fork in the road offer is unprecedented. It's not consistent with the legal approaches that an administration can use to do exactly this. Why haven't they just offered federal employees early retirement across the board? Why haven't they gone through the congressionally authorized separation program that is implemented by OPM regulations? And then in addition to that, there are budgetary questions, right? We're on a continuing resolution through March 14th. What's to stop the Republican-controlled Congress in enacting a new budget from saying, we're not going to honor this agreement to pay people not to do their job? And then lastly, the American people need to ask, what is the plan for delivering essential government services? What is the plan if a bunch of national security workers take this deal? Or if an entire office in a county in Iowa of USDA workers takes that deal? Who's going to help those farmers?
I want to thank you both for being with us. Rob Shriver, senior advisor for Democracy Forward, former acting director of OPM. That's the Office of Personnel Management. And Robert Weissman, co-president of Public Citizen. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll speak with the former head of the EPA's Environmental Justice Program, which the Trump administration is trying to shut down. Back in 20 seconds.
A righteousness did build the arrow to shoot it straight into their lives. Who would expect the mighty sparrow could rid our world of all their kind, rising up and taking back property of every man? It's so easy, so, so easy.
The whole point of No Return by the Style Council. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show with President Trump's moves to shut down the Environmental Protection Agency's Office of Environmental Justice and External Civil Rights. On Thursday, 168 workers of the Environmental Justice Office were placed on leave. The office was first established in 1992 after research showed communities with hazardous waste sites had a higher percentage of Black and low-income residents. For more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Mustafa Santiago Ali, the former head of the EPA's Environmental Justice Program. He resigned in 2017 to protest a Trump administration proposal to severely scale back the agency. So you resigned under Trump administration one. Now it's not scaling back. It's shutting it down. Can you talk first about what environmental justice is and what it will mean?
Yeah. Well, environmental justice deals with the disproportionate impacts that happen in communities of color and lower wealth communities. And those communities are everywhere from Appalachia to Flint, Michigan, to the Navajo Nation. It makes sure that folks have a voice, makes sure that they have an opportunity to play a role in the impacts that are happening in their communities. It also helps them to be able to play a role in moving from surviving to thriving.
And so you have 168, some people are saying 200 workers within the environmental justice program put on leave. So what happens to communities across the country?
Well, they're now placed in a much dangerous situation because they no longer have that advocate for them inside of the Environmental Protection Agency. You know, we have over 100 million people in our country right now who are dealing with unsafe air, whether it's from ozone, particulate matter, or a number of other things. And many times our most vulnerable communities are the ones who are carrying those burdens. So they no longer have someone to make sure that they have the information that they need and that they have the ability to work with the agency and others to address that. We know that we've got all these dangerous chemicals that are in our waters right now, everything from lead. And we saw what happened in Flint, Michigan, and Benton Harbor, and a number of other locations across our country. But we also have things like TCE and forever chemicals and a number of other things that are just very deadly. So they no longer have someone, a place to be able to go to understand how to navigate these very dangerous situations that they're often facing. They also no longer will have the resources that are necessary to help their groups to be able to properly advocate, to help to make change happen inside of their communities.
The Guardian has an article headlined, Trump's proposed EPA leadership stacked with lobbyists and attorneys. What concerns you most about the EPA right now? And what message do you have right now? Hundreds of EPA career workers have left. ProPublica reports those who remain feel deeply torn. You quit under the first Trump administration. What message do you have for those who are remaining?
Well, first, I'm very concerned about the deregulation and the focus on corporate profits, because anytime that we place profit over people, then we are putting a crosshair on our most vulnerable, our most marginalized. For all those brothers and sisters who are still there at the agency and for those who have been put on leave, I would give them the words of my grandmother, that you have power unless you give it away. And that means that not only them, but citizens across our country who believe that everyone has the right to have clean air and clean water for their children to be able to be on land that is free from toxic pollution, then we have to raise our voices. We have to get engaged. We have to make sure that folks understand that this is not an American value, and that we also have to understand that there is power inside of our vote. I never tell anyone who to vote for, but I do say you should be thinking very clearly about voting for somebody who cares about your communities. So don't give up your power. Continue to build relationships together and stand in solidarity.
Last week, the Senate confirmed former Long Island Republican Congressman Lee Zeldin as head of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. Three Democrats joined with the Republicans in the vote. Arizona Senators Ruben Gallego and Mark Kelly, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman. Youth Climate Action Group Sunrise Movement condemns Zeldin's confirmation as a disaster for the planet and a win for fossil fuel executives, writing, quote, he took $420,000 from big oil, pledged to undo climate protections, and has been all in with Trump, backing corporate polluters at the expense of working people. In this last minute that we have together, Mustafa, where do you see this country going right now? You just stood with other climate activists outside protesting. What is your ultimate demand?
Well, our ultimate demand is to stop placing these crosshairs on vulnerable communities and communities across our country. We should be focused on making sure that folks' health is being improved and not, you know, having a situation where folks are going to be sicker. Their actions also will make us poorer, because we know that the focus for the 21st century has to be on a cleaner economy. So once again, we have the opportunity to move people from surviving to thriving. But the current sets of actions that they're moving forward on is going to do absolutely the opposite.
Mustafa Santiago Ali, we thank you so much for being with us. Former head of the Environmental Justice Program at the Environmental Protection Agency. It is now in the Trump administration's crosshairs. 168 workers at least have been put on leave. He is now the executive vice president of the National Wildlife Federation. That does it for our show, Democracy Now! Produced with my... Nate Feldstein, the Gezer, Messiah Rids, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Teresina, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Asti, Joe John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. Our executive director is Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi there. This is Jan Arden. And if you're listening to Something Fabulous, well, you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, Simon Fraser University Radio, streaming on the internet at cjsf.ca.
What is the forest industry most afraid of? Shifting the conversation from saving old growth to protecting what's left of BC's primary forests, areas with minimal human disturbance and far greater ecological value than tree farms. Save What's Left Conservation Society is a volunteer-run group at the forefront of the movement to save the last remnants of unprotected primary forest through seeking reforms to the government agency, BC Timber Sales. Learn more at savewhatsleft.ca. Find us on social media and please support our vital work through our website.